Now the subject before me today is the evolution of Advaita. So we already discussed many aspects of Advaita philosophy during the last three sessions, and today I'm planning to discuss one very crucial, important doctrine, which is an integral part of non-dualistic philosophy of Advaita. That is the doctrine of Maya. It is unique to Advaita system, and it is not even clearly understood or recognized or properly interpreted by many non-Advaitic schools of Vedanta in India. Like, for example, the schools of Ramanuja, Madhva, Nibbarka, Vallabha, and Chaitanya, and many other non-Advaitic schools of Vedanta frequently fail to understand the real spiritual, philosophical, and, as we are going to understand and find out, the psychological significance of this doctrine of Maya. So we'll discuss that today. Now, the word Maya has got many, many interpretations, but the most important interpretation of Maya is that it is indescribable. It is something that we strongly feel about but cannot actually understand. In fact, the word Maya itself, in a way, describes this aspect of this doctrine. Ma in Sanskrit is used along with certain tenses in the negative sense. For example, ma vadadu, don't speak. Ma agachadu, don't come. Ma agachadu, don't go. It's like that. I mean, if you add ma, and if it is followed by a particular sense, particular tense, it negates it. That means it implies the absence of something. It implies negation. Now, ya is actually used in the sense, like a pronoun. He, she, yaha, he and ya is feminine gender, she, for example. Maya is a feminine gender. So you don't use a pronoun, like, for example, this, that, and we don't use these pronouns unless we have something to point towards. This table, this chair, this mountain, and so on. So this and that cannot be used, or you cannot use it without a corresponding reality, whatever the reality is. So on the one hand, it implies the reality of something. On the other hand, it implies its absence. So that, in a way, sums up the meaning of Maya. So that's why Satcha Maya Vidyade Maya Iti Avidyamanasi Akhya. This is Shankaracharya's own statement in the Mandukya Karika Bhashya. Maya is that which does not exist. Maya is the name of something that is essentially non-existent. So if something is essentially non-existent, if it is not existing, then why do we refer to it? Really speaking, we don't refer to something which is completely non-existent. At least intellectually, as an idea, it should exist in our mind, though it may not have a corresponding ontological reality. But still, Maya implies that which doesn't really exist. So it's a contradiction, actually. So what does it mean? Maya is something that we wrongly interpret as existing, but actually doesn't exist. So that's what the implication. Something that really doesn't exist, but we are not able to understand that fact at the empirical level. The classical example that can be given right now is, let us say, for example, the pot and the clay. It is a very serious, very important discussion. If you want to appreciate that, this aspect of non-dualism, if you are a student of Western philosophy, all the way from Thales 7th century BC, right up to modern times. And if you want to get an answer to the question, why it was that so many great European thinkers, philosophers, right from the later half of 18th century, up to our own times, and the list is quite a long one. In fact, the list includes men like Schopenhauer, Colebrooke, Keith, MacDonald, Max Müller, Paul Deussen, and coming close to our own times, a man like Paul Brandon, now, who is of course not a philosopher like Schopenhauer or Paul Deussen, but still, the point is, many of these great thinkers who have received the best of Western philosophical academic education, the best of something that perhaps, unfortunately, I would say, not available in American universities today. These are the men who actually turned a new chapter in the evolution of Western thought, Western academic culture. Max Müller, Schopenhauer, Paul Deussen, the list is endless. When they read the Upanishads and Shankaracharya's works, and when they understood the doctrine of Maya, then only they really appreciated the depth and the philosophical, spiritual grandeur of this doctrine. So I shall try to make it as simple as possible with the help of some analogies. In fact, the analogy is taken from the classical, philosophical, the canonical literature of Advaita philosophy itself, non-dualistic philosophy itself. The pot and a pot made of clay and a clay itself. When you are looking at a pot or maybe a cup or a jar or any vessel made of clay, you are looking at an object which has its own shape, its own name, various shapes and various names. Now, if you break all these, let's say, for example, in front of you, there are 100 vessels, 100, pots and pans and jars and so on, different things made from clay. You break them all, they go back to clay. And before a pot maker made it, it was clay. So before a pot was made, it was clay, and after it is broken, it is clay. So what about the pot that is sitting in front of you on your table? Then also it's only clay. It was clay before the pot was made. It will be clay when it is broken, and it is certainly clay alone when it is sitting right in front of you. What does it mean? It means clay is real. Pots and pans, all these are different names because of different shapes and different forms. Clay is real. Names and forms are real only for some time. When it was made, when the clay was turned into a pot, the name of the pot and the shape of the pot came into existence. When it is broken, then you don't call it a pot, and it doesn't have the shape of a pot. It is only clay. So even while sitting in front of you in the form of a pot, then also it is clay. This is what Vedanta tells you. Now, you may ask this question, and that's a very important question in modern times. What does it mean then? What does it mean? It means everything that we encounter, experience in our everyday life at the empirical level is only a changing phenomenon, not eternal not permanent, not real in the capital letter of the word real are. That's what it is. Now, what does it mean, in fact, in our real life? Most of our worries and anxieties and problems, most of the sleepless nights that people spend, most of the cases of anxiety, neurosis, depression, melancholy, and so on, and of course, even bipolar problems, are all due to the wrong view, the wrong perception that this thought is absolutely real, it never changes, it will always remain thought. We believe this empirical world, our job, the money, the wealth, the status, even the health, all these are meant to be real, all these are meant to be permanent, all these are meant to be unchanging. That's a wrong notion we have. Once we recognize that it's all changing, it's all impermanent, they're not unreal in the absolute sense of the word, unreal, but they're not real in the absolute sense of the word, real. They are only impermanent, changing entities, changing realities. They are only changing. If you understand this, a lot of problems can be solved in this empirical world. A lot of our worries and anxieties are wrong because we wrongly interpret impermanent things as permanent. So that is the spiritual and the psychological significance of the word Maya. Now, Shankaracharya used this not in this sense, but this is only a practical utility that we can find in the context of our own times. But historically, in the context of Advaita philosophy, it was used in Advaita philosophy as a principle of unifying contradiction between the absolute reality, Brahman, and this world. In Vedanta or non-dualism, Brahman, the absolute reality, is the unchanging, it is Nishkriya, Niravayava, Nirguna, Nirubadhika. There are certain terms used here. It means it is beyond forms, it is beyond actions, it transcends actions, it transcends verbalizations, it transcends definitions and descriptions. It transcends certain qualifying adjectives, certain modifications by which we try to understand and interpret things. It's beyond all this. That is the absolute reality in Vedanta. Brahma Satyam, that's the meaning. That's the first doctrine of Advaita philosophy. Brahma, Brahman is only absolute reality. Remember, there's a great difference between Brahma and Brahman. Those of you who have read Emerson, you may have read that four verses together called Brahma, the poem, the magnificent, the highly celebrated poetical work of Emerson. Very short one. Now, frequently, in English translations, and even while reading, we mispronounce the word Brahma. But what Emerson had in mind was Brahman. Brahman is the absolute reality, beyond name, beyond form. It is the all-pervading divine spirit, present everywhere, present in everything, present in me, present in you, present everywhere. All-pervading, omnipresent, immanent, and transcendent. That is the absolute principle. It is not a name of a creator God. It is the divine reality, which is the essence of creator God. The creator God idea is only just an expression, an inadequate, incomplete expression. The word Brahma, as often the long one, it is the name of a creator God in Hindu Trinity. Hindu Trinity, in the monotheistic tradition, also polytheistic tradition, the Holy Trinity is classified as the one who is for ക്രിയേഷൻ ബ്രഹ്മ ഇത് ക്രിയേറ്റർ ദ ക്രിയേറ്റർ കൺസെപ്റ്റ് ഓഫ് ഗോഡ് വിഷ്ണു ഇത് സസ്റ്റെയ്നർ ദ പ്രൊട്ടക്ടർ ദ വൺ ഹു പ്രിസേർവ്സ് ആൻഡ് മഹേശ്വര ഈ ശിവ ഇത് ഇത് കറസ്പോണ്ടിങ് ഡീറ്റി വിറ്റ് ഈസ് വിച്ച് കറസ്പോണ്ട്സ് ടു ദി ആക്ട് ഓഫ് ഡിസൊല്യൂഷൻ ഓഫ് ദ യൂണിവേഴ്സ് ഐ മീൻ ദ എഫക്ട്സ് ഗോയിങ് ബാക്ക് ടു ദ കോസ് But the word we used here is Brahman, this meaning here. It's actually neutral, neutral gender. Anyway, that's a different subject. So, Brahman is only reality in Vedanta. Everything else is either conceptual realities or maybe empirical realities. Empirical realities go on changing. Like, for example, the pot made of clay. It is not absolutely unreal because the pot is sitting in front of you. A clay cup is sitting in front of you. You use it for drinking water. So it is not absolutely unreal. But you break it, it goes back to clay. So it changes. So empirical realities. I mean, everyday sense reality. It could be avaharika satta. Then there are certain conceptual realities which frequently correspond to things that do not exist where we actually think it exists. When you mistake one object for another one because this later one is remembered, your mind reminds you, if you see a piece of rope, you are reminded of a snake of similar shape and size and color. A snake that you saw in the forest or the zoo the previous day. The memory is there in your mind. It's a concept. It's an idea that is superimposed upon the rope that you see in front of you. But it is not snake. It is only rope. It's only conceptual reality. Pradibhasika satta. The absolute reality is paramarthika satta. The absolute unchanging reality is paramarthika satta. The empirical everyday common sense reality is vyavaharika satta. And the conceptual realities, this idea that exists only in our mind, is also not totally unreal. When you mistake a rope that is lying in front of you for a snake, you cannot say that a snake is totally unreal. But you can say the snake doesn't lie on that spot. What is lying in front of you is only a rope, not a snake. The snake exists somewhere, maybe in the forest, in the zoo, and you saw that snake the previous day and you remember. And that memory is now superimposed upon that particular rope. It's called adhyasa, means superimposition. Smriti rupa, Shankaracharya says. Anyway, so the point is, if we can actually remember the meaning of maya as something indescribable, non-definable, inexplicable, something that we are part of, but something that we recognize to be unreal when we are free from it, when we are free from the wrong notion, when we become spiritually enlightened, then you understand as a fact, and not as an intellectual conviction alone, but as a fact that Maya is actually not real. Though, till you reach that level of spiritual enlightenment, you may think it is real, but right now it is not real. So this is the uniqueness of this doctrine of Maya. Something very, very fundamental, very essential for us to understand. Anyway, so that's an important thing to remember. In fact, Shankaracharya makes some very, very, very profound statements about this interesting Maya. So, how does the permanent eternal reality Brahman, how does he appear to be behind this creation? How does it appear to be the creator of this empirical world? This question may arise. So Shankaracharya, he brought forward this idea from Vedic literature and used this idea to interprets the mysterious way in which the eternal reality appears to have become this non-eternal empirical world. Of course, the idea goes back to Rigveda. Indro maya vipraruvayate, you find Rigveda Samhita. And mayam tu prakritim vidyat, mayinam tu maheshwara, you find in Vedasara Upanishad. Different Vedic and Upanishad literary classics explain this maya as something by which the eternal, the permanent, eternal, unchanging reality appears to have become this non-eternal, changing, material world. In one of his very famous, very interesting paragraph in the Mandukya Karika, is a commentary written by Shankaracharya on the Mandukya Upanishad and Gaudapada's interpretation of Mandukya Upanishad, called Gaudapada Karika. He says, and I shall first explain this interesting paragraph in great details, and then I can't resist the temptation of reciting that famous statement from this unique classic. He says, you know, suppose you are walking in the seashore, say along with your grandchildren, or maybe small little kids, and in the evening when there is beautiful sunlight, the twilight, and then the blue sky is above, and the child looks at the sky, and the sun is about to set in the west. On the western horizon, the sunlight appears to become golden. And the interplay of clouds, blue, dark clouds, the golden light of the setting sun, all this combination creates a unique delusion. And the child thinks there's a big city in the sky. And in that city, there are shops, because he has seen the market street, perhaps. So many shops, wonderful things on display for people to choose and buy from. But so the child has seen, you know, so small a kid, he can't see, he can't discriminate between the real market street and the phenomenon that he sees high in the clouds. So a father or grandfather, maybe grandfather is walking with him, and the child tells the grandfather, "Grandfather, is there a big city in the sky with so many shops and people walking?" Children sometimes have this feeling. In modern times, of course, unfortunately, those times are gone when children used to have philosophical hallucinations and delusions. Now they mostly have nightmares because of our own times and these challenges, the terrible things of modern life. You know, they may have maybe nightmares. But in those days, let us say the 8th century, the writer Shankaracharya writes, so the child tells his grandfather, the old man, "Grandfather, are there shops in the sky where people are walking, buying different things, whether buildings, palaces, markets?" And maybe the grandfather may tell him, "No, it's all only blue or dark clouds against the setting sun." And immediately the delusion is gone from the child's mind. This is something that Shankaracharya makes in a very, very famous poetical language. You know, this is famous poetry. I shall just see. For example, he says, "Yathacha prasarida panyapana griha prasada sri pumjana padavyavahara akirnamiva gandharva nagaram drishyamanameva sat." Now, gandharva nagaram, gandharva, you know, they are supposed to be some celestial beings living in the high heavens. Mythological stories. Celestial beings, more like the angels mentioned in the New Testament. The angels who came and started singing. You can find this in the context of the nativity of Jesus in the New Testament. Now, something like this, they are called angels. And Gandharvas are great musicians of this heavenly world. It's part of mythology. Now, it is a city inhabited by these divine minstrels, divine singers, dancers, who are inhabiting this remote high heavens. And there are shops, markets, palaces, and people, men and women. See, you can find Sri Pumjana Pada Vyavahara Akirnamiva. It looks like it is all crowded with men and women walking in the streets of heavens. Drishyamanameva Sat. See, a child may think it is real, but akasmad abhavadam gadam drishtam. Immediately, when grandfather corrects the child, it's gone. That mysterious city, the dancers, people walking the streets and markets all disappeared. Yathaja svapnamaye drishte asadrube tatha vishamidam dvaidam asadrishtam. So Shankaracharya says, when you reach the highest level of spiritual enlightenment, then you live in this world, but you know this is only Gandharva Nagara. This is only a city in the clouds, which cannot be real. That is a high state of spiritual evolution. Now, what's the difference between a spiritually wise man and a person who is not spiritually inclined? You need not be like a Buddha or a Shankaracharya or a Sri Ramakrishna to understand this. Even when you evolve in your common sense, ordinary common sense, in your way of understanding, you will suddenly start thinking, oh, this is coming and going. See, a boy of 5 years, when he gets a low grade in his kindergarten, may come to a grandfather, parents, crying and weeping. But parents or grandparents who have gone through this stage long ago have not become great professors or scientists. They know that there is nothing terribly wrong in getting a very low grade in the kindergarten or primary school examination. It need not make you, it need not shock you. It need not be a disaster for you. One day you will get over this and you get high grades. So the grandfather will tell the child, okay, don't worry, you'll improve. This is just pure common sense wisdom. Like that, if he can interpret this everyday life as something that comes and goes, which is subject to these mutations, changes, appearing and disappearing, when we recognize this to be an essential part of this world and life in this world, then we become spiritually wise. It is kind of spiritual common sense. It's just like, you know, when you have a mud cup in your home and if it's broken, you don't cry and weep, but your four-year-old child may weep because he doesn't know that this mud cup is meant to be broken. Mud cup cannot retire and get cholera or cancer and die. It's broken. It's part of its nature. So an old man is not shocked, but a child may weep and cry. Like that, we also live in this world. When small, tiny problems confront us, we are shocked we are devastated because we think this tiny little problem is an eternal reality, which it is not. And that's precisely what Vedanta tells you. Vedanta comes to us as pure, simple common sense, which all of us can really relate to. But we frequently forget. Vedanta only tells us, reminds us of something that we frequently forget or we fail to remember. That's why Shankaracharya gives this wonderful, interesting, funny picture. The high clouds, the twilight, the setting sun, the golden color, the rays, the golden color, the golden rays of the sun, all these conspire to create the delusion in the minds of the child who is looking at this. Oh, there is a big shop, a big street, a big market, high up in the mountains, maybe in the clouds. But the father, grandfather tells him it's only a delusion. And immediately it is gone. That's what Shankaracharya says, you know. So, akasmat abhavadam drishtam. That's again is a psychological point. The moment we understand, we recognize the impermanence of the impermanent world, the non-eternal nature of all these non-eternal things, problem is gone. When a patient is told by his doctor that he has some serious illness, or when his employer tells him that he is no more wanted next day in the office, he loses his job, or when a student studying the university is informed that he gets only very low grade in the examinations, suddenly, we wrongly interpret that unfortunate situation to be a permanent situation, which it is not. That will change. Akasmadam gadam is a bhashagrahita. Akasmad abhavadam gadam means all these things will suddenly cease to exist. Something else will come in its place. So the essential, the inherent impermanence of the empirical world and all experiences in this empirical world, which we all know, which we all encounter and experience, but we forget, we fail to draw the right lessons from these experiences, which the reason, which is what really causes us to cry and weep and get devastated when something goes wrong in our life. That fact is very emphatically reminded by the great commentator Shankaracharya. So that is the psychological significance of the doctrine of Maya. As I mentioned, I mentioned this earlier, but he definishes Maya, yasa Maya na vidyate. Maya is something that really doesn't exist. Let me ask you one question. Does anyone talk about something that really doesn't exist? That never even be that cannot even be conceived of. Nobody ever talks about things that cannot be even intellectually conceived of. Nobody ever talks about something that is absolutely unreal. No one talks about something that is absolutely unreal. And no one talks about something that is absolutely real. No one talks about it. If your name is X, you don't go about telling people, my name is X. You don't do that. You don't go about telling people, well, this is California. This is San Francisco. You don't tell to anyone unless you want to be certified. No one does that. There is no need of making an emphatic statement or something that is obvious, that is absolutely real. And no one can deny something which is absolutely obvious and real. You don't say, this is not San Francisco, you don't say. So when do we make a statement? It is not right. It's not there. We make the statement only when it is not there, but the possibility of it being there is very much there. Mr. John has not arrived. He made the statement because there is some possibility of John sometimes arriving. Then only we make a statement, either in affirmative or in the negative. Bhashyakara Shankaracharya makes a profound statement, aprasaktasya ka prastavaha, aprasaktasya ko nishethaha. Prasaktasya ka prastavaha, prasaktasya ko nishethaha. This is the meaning. What is obvious, we never deny and we don't affirm. So that's the point. But we make the statement, you know, this world is maya. Why do we make the statement, this world is maya? This world is unreal, because we all are likely to misunderstand, misinterpret this world, this changing world, to be the unchanging reality. Therefore, Advaita tells you, remember, these things are only changing realities. In the sense, they are only relative, they are not absolute. So that's only common sense, spiritual common sense. That's the message of Advaita philosophy and non-dualism. Something that we all know, but we often forget because of our nature. If we break a clay pot, sometimes we cry and weep, thinking that a clay pot is meant to be a clay pot for billions of years. No. It can stay only for some time. If our health fails, we are shocked because we think this body of five elements is expected to be unchanging eternal realities. This body is bound to change. A human body is bound to become unhealthy one day or other. Money also is likely to get lost one day or other. So this simple common sense conviction is philosophically explained by Shankaracharya in the sense maya. That's why, you know, ma is indicative of negation. Ya is a pronoun. A pronoun cannot be used without referring to something that is in front of you. Ma is used to deny it. So these two words coming together will tell us, you know, all these empirical things are there, but they are certainly not eternal. That's a simple teaching that comes from the great Advaita doctrine of Maya. There is a well-known, maybe it's not just well-known, it is the most profound and most oft-quoted definition of Maya. It comes in the Viveka Chudamani. Those of you can go back, go to your home and read, 111th verse. Sannapya sannapya bhayatmigano, bhinnapya bhinnapya bhayatmigano, sangapya sangapya bhayatmigano, mahan buddha anirvachani yirupa. There are many, many definitions. In fact, in the post-Shankara dialectical works of Padmapada's Panchapadika, and Prakashatmayadhi's Panchapadika Vivarana, and Chitsugacharya's Tattva Pratipika, and Anandabhavada's Nyaya Deepavali, and Prakashatmayadhi's again, you know, Panchapadika Vivarana. There are many, many definitions of Maya and Mithya, innumerable. In fact, Ramanuja has written a wonderful book, in fact, Ramanuja's system, a project, you know, Sapta Anupapatti Vadaha, means seven major objections to the doctrine of Maya, you can find. Okay, these are all meant for another age, which those who are interested, those who devote their entire life to study this great philosophical system in India, they study all this. Those who are interested can listen to my new series which I have started, which is hosted by the Stanford University Students Association, Hindu Students Association. It's called, you know, a series of lectures every Sunday, 6 p.m. You can get information from our website. it's called, it is the fundamental, the foundational text of Indian philosophy. The foundational text of Indian philosophy. So we'll be discussing all the major canonical literature, philosophical literature of Indian, different Indian philosophical systems. Gradually that series has already started. Those who are interested can listen to them. They are more of an academic nature. Sunday lecture cannot be of that type, at least. So I shall finish with this definition. This Maya is Mahadbhuta Anirvachaneya Rupa. It's a great wonder, the great mystery, something which is indescribable, which is beyond definition, beyond explanation, beyond description. So Maya has got a deep message and relevance in our everyday life. Maya should not be dismissed as some kind of a world-negating doctrine, as frequently done by those who don't have the good fortune to study the original scriptures, or to listen to those who have studied those scriptures. You can find this strong criticism of this Maya doctrine in India, maybe much more in India than outside, because people unfortunately do not understand it and don't study the original books, or even care to listen to lectures and classes given by those who have studied original scriptures. So Maya is not a negation of the world. Maya is not a negation of everyday common sense empirical realities. Maya is only mild way of reminding you of what you actually already know. A man who is running a crematorium, every day he is confronting this very sad spectacle of these lifeless bodies being pushed to the tube, turned into ashes. He also believes that life he is going to live for all times. So there is an interesting statement in Mahabharata. Ahanyahanni bhudani gacchandeva himalayam. Every day we are all witnessing this. These changes happening. Human beings, insects, animals, all dying and disappearing. Still, people believe that this health, this body, this wealth, this job is going to last for eternal times, last forever. Now, this is also one operation of Maya. So Maya actually, it puts a veil in front of you so that you cannot really become aware of what you are actually witnessing or learn the right lesson from it. And then it projects something else, the wrong notion that this body, this wealth, this job, all these things are going to last forever. This wrong notion comes because the right understanding is veiled or concealed. Anyway, this is an interesting subject which we will be discussing in the series, the lecture, every Sunday, 6 p.m. We have this online class, that is the foundational text of Indian philosophy. Thank you. Namaskar. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.